Welcome back to Midpoint, folks, on this April 15th. I'm still your host, Shelley Reback. We have a great show for you today. We'll be talking about the latest information about these icy conditions we've been experiencing in Florida lately. And of course, I'm not talking about the weather. Yes, I'm talking about immigration and customs enforcement, that kind of ice. Axios reports that the immigration arrests in Florida have skyrocketed under President Trump, an increase that local immigration advocates attribute to how the state's local police and sheriff's departments have partnered with ICE. Since Trump took office in 2025, ICE's Miami field office, which controls Florida, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands, has conducted 41,300 immigration arrests, more than any other field office in the country. So it seemed prudent for us to focus some attention on just what ICE is doing around here and what we can do about it. To that end, I've invited my guests, David Sinclair, the past Florida State Director of LULAC, the League of United Latin American Citizens. LULAC is the oldest and largest Latino civil rights organization in the United States, and they are on the front lines of the immigration enforcement efforts here and around the country. And Drew Vaughn is also with us. Drew is the president of the East Hillsborough Democratic Club. If you're familiar with Hillsborough County, you know that East Hillsborough is an area with a very large Hispanic population. It is largely rural and benefits from the labor of many Hispanic farm workers. Drew is going to teach us the ICE Whistle Code. The code is a community-based alert system used to signal immigration enforcement activity in the area. If you were one of the lucky ones who contributed to WMNF and directed your contribution to Midpoint in the last fund drive, and you received one of our very fine Midpoint branded whistles as a premium gift, then you will be especially interested in learning the ICE code from Drew. But really, you can use any whistle as a community alert signal. So stay tuned for that in a few minutes after our news nuggets of the week. First, Mitch Perry, one of the hosts of Friday's The Skinny, right here on WMNF and a senior political reporter for the Florida Phoenix, reports that the NPAs, those Florida voters who are registered to vote but not registered with any political party, are giving Florida Democrats a real chance at the polls in November. Mitch says a month after Florida Democrats scored upset victories in two special legislative elections, a new survey shows their top candidates for statewide offices are either in a statistical tie or leading against Republican opponents. The survey of 1,834 likely Florida voters conducted by two Miami Democratic consulting firms suggests that President Donald Trump's increasing unpopularity is spurring non-party affiliated voters to move heavily towards Democratic candidates in some of the biggest races on the ballot in November. In the governor's race, David Jolly is now in a statistical tie with GOP U.S. Representative Byron Donalds in a presumptive one-on-one matchup for governor, with Donalds getting 41.2% of support to Jolly's 40.5%. Another 18% still remain undecided. Now, Orange County Mayor Jerry Demings, Jolly's top opponent in the Democratic primary, was not included in the survey. In the race for the U.S. Senate, GOP incumbent Ashley Moody is barely ahead of Democratic retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel Alex Vindman, with Moody getting 43.4% to Vindman's 42.2%, with 14% undecided. And the other major Democrat in that race, Jacksonville State Representative Angie Nixon, was not included in the poll. In the most surprising result of this survey, even Democrat Jose Javier Rodriguez, a virtual unknown, is leading that fascist-like James Uthmeyer for Attorney General. 42.8% to 39.6%. I'm guessing it's just because Jose Javier Rodriguez has a D next to his name. Trump has become so toxic, even in this Trumpiest of states, his home state of Florida, that unaffiliated voters who make up nearly a third of the Florida electorate are running away from the GOP. The Democrats' success in a House seat and a Senate seat last month were fueled by big-time support by NPA voters who are clearly moving towards Democrats in big numbers. Excuse me. For you political science nerds, the survey was conducted in all 10 Florida media markets with 100 people responding in Spanish, with a margin for error at plus or minus 2 points. Although the survey was conducted by two Democratic-leaning firms, Martin Page with MDW Communications said that of the 1,834 voters surveyed, 44% were registered Republicans, 34% were registered Democrats, and 22% were either registered as NPAs or with other smaller political parties. That's close to the official breakdown of voter registration in Florida, which is 41% Republicans, 30% Democrats, and 29% of NPAs or other parties. And Page said that the methodology was designed to ensure inclusion of more conservative-leaning NPA voters in the survey. So I'm feeling pretty good about these survey results. How about you? Thanks, Mitch, for that report. And in more good news, a leading Republican consultant in Florida says redrawing congressional districts right now probably wouldn't help Republicans. In fact, a more aggressive approach could put three Republican-held seats in real danger. That may explain why Governor DeSantis came out just yesterday and said he's interested in just a little tweak of redistricting. In Florida politics, Jacob Ogles reports that Alex Alvarado wrote in an analysis for the Civic Data and Research Institute that, according to his modeling, aggressive redistricting would raise the number of competitive seats in Florida from 4 to 7, but wouldn't give Republicans any net gain. The memo comes as the Republican-led legislature prepares for a special session called by DeSantis. Despite past disagreements between the legislature and the governor, many Republican lawmakers expect House and Senate leaders to let DeSantis decide what potential new districts would look like. Legislators are set to meet again on April 20th, but DeSantis has not shared a map of what his little tweak of proposed new districts would look like yet. However, Alvarado's memo suggests changing the district lines now would actually hurt Republicans. Republicans now hold 20 of Florida's 28 U.S. House seats, but much of that success depends on incumbents doing especially well, especially among voters who aren't registered to a party. But redistricting inherently reduces or eliminates these incumbent advantages through new boundaries, incumbent displacement, and loss of constituent service benefits, Alvarado wrote. The problem is that redistricting would force even strong incumbents to campaign in areas where voters aren't familiar with their records and where there's no guarantee that voters in a new district would see an incumbent as anything other than a typical Republican candidate. Alvarado highlights recent special election results covering parts of 4 districts already targeted by one or both parties. 2 of the Republican congressional seats deemed most competitive under the current map are in our local area. In Ana Paulina Luna's district, voters went from leaning Republican by nearly 10 points to leaning Democratic by 7 points. And in Laura Lee's district, it shifted from a 12-point Republican lead to a 30-point Democratic one. These districts would become toss-ups or flip Democratic without incumbency protection, exactly what the special elections demonstrated, Alvarado wrote. But if Republicans go for an aggressive gerrymander, some activists want up to 5 more seats where Trump won a majority, it could actually backfire badly against them in November. Alvarado thinks Democrats could gain 2 to 4 seats in Florida under the current map if it's a good year for them. But with an aggressive GOP redistricted map, Democrats could flip 7 to 10 seats. So maybe it's time to be supporting DeSantis's push for redistricting. What do you think? All right, let's get to our topic of the day, our very icy environment in Florida. Let me introduce my guest again. David Sinclair is the past Florida State Director of LULAC, the largest and oldest Hispanic civil rights organization in the United States. Welcome to Midpoint, David.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here with you, with our friends in the community. Thank you, Shirley, for having me.
All right. And Drew Vaughn is here. Drew is the president of the East Hillsborough Democratic Club. And lately, he's been teaching local citizens, over 1,000 of them so far, how to use the ICE whistle codes through the Hillsborough Whistle Watch organization that he started. And I hope Drew's going to teach us too today. So I'm very happy to have you with us, Drew.
Thanks for having me, Shelley.
All right, let me begin with David Sinclair. David, please tell us what the ICE environment looks like in our area today, and what is LULAC doing to respond to it?
Thank you so much, Shelley. In Florida, there's much fear, not only of the community of the undocumented, but also in the community of those of us who are documented, those of us who have been born here, those of us who have come as immigrants and who are documented. LULAC is the League of United Latin American Citizens. It is open to persons of all groups. We as a nonprofit believe that we belong in the community. We want all members of the community to feel safe. Here in Florida, there is much fear of ICE, and we as a nonprofit, LULAC, feel that it is our duty to reach out to the community and say, enough is enough. One action that LULAC is doing through one of our councils here in Tampa this coming Saturday, April 18, we're going to have a panel. And let me tell you about this panel. Because everybody is invited to it, we're going to discuss how the community, both those who are documented, as myself, and those who are undocumented, can form bonds together to protect themselves. How we can talk about what legal ways we can do as direct action, listen to immigration attorneys, listen to those in the community who are in solidarity with immigrants. Listen to civil rights organizers.
So is that all going to be addressed at the event that
yes,
you're hosting?
It will be all addressed. Let me tell you where it is.
Yes, and give the date again.
Yes, Saturday, April 18.
That's this coming Saturday.
It is this coming Saturday at 10:30 in the morning at the Town and Country Library here in Tampa at 7606 Paula Drive in Tampa in the community room. Everybody's invited. It is free.
And is it going to be in English and Spanish?
It will be in English, and we will have interpretations simultaneous in Spanish.
Okay. And so you're going to have immigration lawyers. You're going to have immigration advocates. Are you cooperating with any other organizations?
We're having members on the panel from the Tampa Bay Immigrant Solidarity Committee.
Okay.
Yes. And the purpose of the event is something unique. LULAC feels that it's important for the community to understand that for those who want to accompany the undocumented, those who want to support the undocumented, for example, like helping them with shopping so they don't have to go out into the community where there's fear.
Yeah, and we've read a lot about that going on in Minnesota, for example. These networks of volunteer citizens who are not concerned about their own immigration status, putting together groups to purchase, food and diapers and things that people need while they're hiding from ICE, right?
Yes, and the uniqueness of our event on Saturday, and this is what I want to emphasize for those who will come, is that we want to deal with the fear that there is in the community. We need to get rid of the fear. Remember in the civil rights movement in the 60s, people did support. Now there is this resistance. People are not coming out to support the undocumented, but we can overcome that fear by listening to immigration attorneys, learning what our constitutional rights are. We can deal with this fear.
Are you suggesting that people who are citizens have a fear of helping them?
I do believe that we do not know enough of our constitutional rights, and thus we are in fear. By learning about our rights, we can overcome that fear.
I know that LULAC has published something called El Escudo, which is an immigrant rights and resources toolkit that details all of these rights that people have, especially when they come into contact with enforcement authorities, whether it's ICE or the Florida Highway Patrol if they're on the road, or at a border, like any airport, for example, is a border. And I know that LULAC has prepared this very detailed informational toolkit about your rights as an immigrant, regardless of your particular immigration status, and also your rights as a citizen. So is that going to be made available at this event?
We will let the audience have access to that website. And particularly, and I will end my point on this, is that part of the panel discussion, and we'll have small groups afterwards, is to deal with the precautions and the risks and the barriers that we as the documented have and need to deal with so that we can be more forceful and positive and build bonds within the community so that we can accompany and support those members of our community who should not be hunted.
Okay. All right. So basically, if I understand it correctly, this is in large measure an opportunity for citizens, as opposed to people without citizenship status, for citizens to come together and develop the kinds of community support organizations that we read about in Minneapolis, for example, in Chicago, like the groups that provide food, like people that transport kids to school, or home from school, that type of thing, that there will be information about access to immigration lawyers and what to do when you're detained. So if, for example, you're a person with children and you're detained, you might be advised how to put together a guardianship agreement for your children so that someone can take custody of your children and take care of them, because they may be citizens, make medical decisions for them, take them to school, pick them up from school, that type of thing, right? All those things will be covered?
Yes, Shelley, you are 100% correct.
Okay. Well, that seems like it's a really good thing to do, to bring in the citizens to develop these community-based response networks, I guess, because they're needed more and more now that we see that Florida is pretty much a hotbed of ICE activity. I'm going to turn to Drew, who's from East Hillsboro, where there's a large rural population and a big group of Hispanic people who essentially work the farms out there, right? What has been happening out in East Hillsboro with respect to their interactions with ICE?
You know, what one of the challenges that we face is that because of what is called 287G, mm-hmm. which is the law that allows for cooperation between local law enforcement and ICE, it is often challenging to see some of these enforcement mechanisms that ICE is putting out there, where they are taking our friends and our family and our neighbors. Because what you might see is a Florida Highway Patrol car pulling somebody over. What you might see is a Hillsborough County Sheriff pulling somebody over. You might see a Plant City police officer pulling somebody over. And those are often ICE interactions. The state of Florida tracks interactions involving immigration. In about the last 6 months, there have been over 20,000 stops related to this, 16,000 arrests, the bulk of those by the Florida Highway Patrol. And so one of the things that's unique here in comparison to Chicago or Minneapolis is that it's not as easy to identify ICE immigration efforts in comparison to Chicago, where you can tell that, hey, this is somebody in an ICE outfit doing it. Down here, unfortunately, our local law enforcement, through these 287G rules, you might see somebody who's a deputy that you know, a sheriff that you know. And so that makes it a lot more challenging to identify how many ICE stops are happening.
Now, these 287 rules are actually agreements between local law enforcement and federal immigration enforcement that tie them together and that bind the local law enforcement to assist in ICE or immigration enforcement efforts, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, and here in Florida, I believe that our legislature passed a law that required local law enforcement to enter into these 287 agreements. And so pretty much every local law enforcement agency, whether it's, you know, Bel Air Beach Police or a huge agency like the Hillsborough County Sheriff, for example, or the Florida Highway Patrol, is bound by these 287 agreements to cooperate with ICE enforcement. And, you know, it's interesting that recently our mayor, the city of Tampa mayor, Jane Castor, was criticized by the state attorney general, James Uthmeyer, for not doing enough or for allowing the Tampa police to be less cooperative than he thought they should be with immigration enforcement. And he claimed that our city of Tampa police were not abiding by that agreement. And I think Jane made a statement to the effect of, well, we're going to review it and see where we are and definitely make sure that we're in compliance with the agreement. That just happened, I think it was 2 weeks ago, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, and it seems to me that that's what prompted, that those agreements are what prompted Uthmeyer's response to the mayor. But all right, so people who have a somewhat shaky immigration status then, who basically, which is anyone who's not a citizen, and even some citizens have to be concerned if they're stopped by Florida Highway Patrol in particular, that's going to be an encounter that is more than just getting a ticket for speeding. It may in fact result in their detention as an immigration enforcement encounter. So what should people do if they see ICE activity? I mean, you know, we can't have people like starting police chases on the highways. You know, that would be dangerous to everyone. So what are we recommending that people should do if they see or suspect ICE activity in their community?
So I think there are a couple of options. One of the first options I would recommend is calling this phone number, 1-888-600-5762. That's 888-600-5762. That is the number for the Florida ACLU's Legal Observer and Rapid Response Team. These are people who have been trained by the Florida ACLU to come out to verify if it is in fact an ICE sighting, and then to report back and to document what it is that they see. And they are trained to record by the ACLU so that they do so legally. The second thing that you can do, if you don't want to simply rely on the ACLU, is to protect your neighborhood yourself. And by protecting your neighborhood yourself, one of the things that you can do is you can use something as simple as a whistle. Now, why do we use whistles? Whistles are legally protected First Amendment speech. You are allowed to blow a whistle. So we're using those constitutional rights to make sure that we are keeping our neighborhood safe. You can use that whistle to let people know that ICE is in your neighborhood, or that they're detaining somebody so that people can come out to record what ICE is doing. The reality is that our legal system is structured not to be proactive in stopping harm, but to react to harm that has happened. These recordings of ICE officers will allow us ultimately to hold the people who are doing bad things in our neighborhoods accountable.
Yeah, and we learned from as far back as the George Floyd incident, for example, the value of recording encounters between law enforcement and people. We learned, and it's the same thing that we are seeing with these ICE encounters, that when people, because often people who are present and recording these events are themselves arrested for things like obstruction of justice or something like that, or interference in some way with law enforcement. And the video recordings that other people have taken, when that person who's arrested goes to court, establish the true circumstances of what went on. And oftentimes those circumstances are such that they provide a defense to the person who's arrested, because in fact you can see with your own eyes that there was no such obstruction, or there was no assault on a law enforcement officer, or that type of thing. So video recording, you would suggest, is a really important thing for bystanders to do. And of course, you can't interfere with the officer. You can't stop them from doing whatever it is that they're doing, but you can certainly record it on your phone.
Correct. And as part of that non-interference, the Florida ACLU has actually put out guidance on recording law enforcement here in Florida. One of the they've laid out kind of three core bullet points. Number one, announce that you are recording so that everybody knows what you're doing. Number two.
Well, excuse me for a second, yes. But announce that you're recording is often itself a way to prevent like violence or an improper arrest, for example, because if law enforcement knows that they're being recorded, oftentimes that tempers their response, right?
It can. And it also is designed to cut the legs out from anybody who would try to make the argument that you did not get my consent to record this audio.
Okay.
And so it accomplishes two core goals at that same time. So first is announce that you're recording. Second thing that the ACLU of Florida recommends is that you stay at least 25 feet away from law enforcement. And that is a direct response to the HALO law, which says, hey, you got to stay back from law enforcement and let them do their job. Now, that does not mean if you're standing there and law enforcement walks towards you, you have an obligation to retreat. They can walk towards you and you can talk to them, but if they ask you to back up, it is recommended that you comply with what their requests are, but keep recording. But you need to stay at least 25 feet away. And the third thing that they recommend is exactly what you said. Don't interfere with law enforcement, because that is how you will get in legal trouble. Now, while you're recording, you want to record landscape style, so hold your phone side to side. You want to not talk
horizontally.
You want to not talk over the arrest so that it can be used as evidence at a future point. And ideally, you would like to get some of the landmarks that are around you as you're recording, such as a street sign or a building address or those types of things, so that you make lawyers' jobs easier in helping to protect these people who are being detained by ICE.
All right. I think that's all really good advice. I've got, listen, if you've got some experience yourself with encounters with ICE, I'd like you to give us a call and tell us about it at 813-239-9663, or you can send us an email to dj@wmnf.org or a text to 813-433-0885. We're here with David Sinclair from LULAC and Drew Vaughn from the Hillsborough Whistle Watch, and we're talking about ICE encounters. I have a I have an email here from Karen in Dunedin who wants to know, what is the threat level in Pinellas County? I attend a church with a high Hispanic congregation. During the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe, because of the large crowd, the Clearwater police were there directing traffic, but I have not seen any ICE activity. Just curious. Thanks, from Karen in Dunedin. Do we know anything on a county-by-county basis of what has been happening, Drew?
We've actually got some great information on this. Now, unfortunately, our Florida state government does not want us to have access to this information, so I'll just read you the first part of this website, which just really rolls right off the tongue. app.powerbiggov.us/view?r=EYJRLOJOIYTEYNTI. And that's about the first tenth of this address. So well, what I will say instead...
Where is this available that we can find this link
and on, so here, online? Here's how I would find it instead, because sharing the link is virtually impossible.
Yeah.
Go on to Google and search for this search term, Florida's suspected unauthorized alien encounters. Again, that's Florida's suspected unauthorized alien encounters. You will then see a link to the State Board of Immigration Enforcement, which will then have a link to their dashboard, which is that impossibly long link to share. If you were to go there, you will find out that they started tracking interactions between ICE and Florida citizens on August 1st, 2025. What's interesting about that is in about October of 2025, journalists down in Miami found this dashboard. And they noticed that in some of the demographic information, there were about 24 U.S. citizens that had been detained. When they started asking about that, that information mysteriously disappeared from this dashboard. No clue how that happened. But if you go to this dashboard, you can find out all kinds of information. It includes the demographics of who has been stopped. And one of the interesting points there is on the demographics, if you click as of today at 10:37 a.m. on April 15th, you will see that 0.44% of people who have been stopped by ICE have any level of gang affiliation. Think about that, 0.44%. Now, I'm no mathematician, but my recollection of seventh grade math is that 0.44 rounds to zero. Hmm. Effectively, no one that they are detaining has any level of gang connection. If you go to this website, you can also find out exactly what is happening in Pinellas, including which groups of law enforcement are detaining people. They have an interactive map that you can click on. So here in Hillsborough County, you would see that the Florida Highway Patrol has made the most stops in Hillsborough County, with the second most by our Hillsborough County Sheriff under those 287G agreements we were talking about earlier. One other element that I found just fascinating looking at this data was then looking at the countries of origin for where they are detaining people. And so what was interesting to me is that here in Florida, we have a very large Cuban immigrant population. About 21% of our immigration into Florida is from Cuba. We have larger numbers from, you know, Haiti and Venezuela as well at about 7%. But when you look at who is being arrested, the largest percentages are from two countries, Mexico and Guatemala. Two of the lower percentages are Cuba and Venezuela. Now, what is fascinating about that is when you look at the Cuban-American community and the Venezuelan-American community, they traditionally tend to vote Republican. The Mexican-American population and the Guatemalan-American population tend to vote Democrat. It's a really odd coincidence, we'll call it, that it turns out that the people ICE would like to detain are people of Mexican and Guatemalan descent when their American citizen counterparts are the ones voting for Democrats. Seems odd to me. But this information is all right out there put out by our Florida state government. So make sure to do that search and see, and you can see all of this for yourself, that this is in fact available. And again, the search you would do is Florida's suspected unauthorized alien encounters, and you will be able to get from that dashboard a link to the app.powerbiggov.us website.
Wow, that's fascinating. Thank you for bringing that to our attention. You know, I have a question here on the email from David, who wanted to know if Latino Trump voters are now regretting their votes, given how disastrously the immigrants are being treated by the Trump goons at ICE. That's David's question. Are there any polls or surveys on Latino Trump voters? I hope they are waking up. That's from David. I don't know whether my guests here have that kind of voting information, but it's interesting that you've suggested that law enforcement somehow is making selections of immigrants here, at least here in Hillsborough County, to basically favor Cuban immigrants over those from Mexico and Guatemala in their enforcement efforts. Has anybody done any public records requests to see if there were any memos that went out from Uffmeyer or the state telling law enforcement to be particularly conscious of the countries of origin of the people that they encounter in immigration efforts?
Not that I am aware of.
Yeah. I wonder.
And I suspect that they would be smart enough not to put that in writing.
Oh.
So my guess is what we can do...
Oh, you think?
...is judge them by the actions and the statistical data that is being produced, not by what they say. You know, look at what they do, not what they say. And what they do is they are not arresting gang members, as their own data shows 0.44% of people that they have arrested with gang affiliation. And it shows that they are, it appears... attempting to avoid communities that have traditionally voted Republican and instead going after communities that immigrate to Florida in lower percentages but tend to, where their American citizen counterparts do vote for Democrats at a higher percentage.
Hmm. Very interesting. Okay, this is Shelley Reback. You're listening to Midpoint. We've got our guest here, Drew Vaughn from Hillsborough Whistle Watch and David Sinclair from LULAC. I'm not Joe Ellen. I'm Shelley Reback. I've got a listener here who wanted to thank our guest for giving that information about the dashboard. All right, so one of the things that you talked about was using the whistles. And I have here in my hand the beautiful WM&F and Midpoint branded whistle that we gave out in our last, as a premium for our listeners who donated and directed their contribution to Midpoint in the last fundraising drive that we did. And this whistle is really a really good whistle. It's a heavy-duty metal whistle, and it's got the logo of WM&F and the logo of the Midpoint Show on it. And I asked them to engrave on it a legend that says "Community Safety Machine," and so the whistle has "Community Safety Machine" engraved on it because it struck me that this was much like Woody Guthrie's guitar that he had inscribed with the legend "This machine kills fascists," and I felt like this whistle was something that really truly was a community safety machine now because we are using these whistles to protect our community, right, Drew?
Yeah.
And I want to know, how are we using it? How are we using them? We have some time right now. I'm a little concerned about blowing this whistle into the microphone.
I don't think we need to blow out any listeners' eardrums with
blowing it. Yeah, trigger warning if you hear the whistle. We don't want any accidents, especially if you're driving and listening to the show. So we may not actually blow them, but we want to learn the whistle code so that if you're out and about, and you don't have to have one of these WM&F fabulous whistles. You can have any whistle, right?
Yeah.
I see David's got a whistle around his neck, right, David?
Yes, I do.
And you wear it all the time, huh?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so any whistle will do, right? As long as it's loud.
Correct.
And it works. But I've asked Drew to teach us the whistle code and tell us about the whistle code and how to use it.
So I think before we get into the whistle code, let's talk about why it's so important that we have this whistle watch.
Okay.
And let's just take news from just this week. Just this week in New Jersey, ICE went to a courtroom and arrested a woman who was there to testify about being raped.
Hmm.
They went and arrested a woman who testified about being raped. They're not going after the rapists, just like you heard in the stats from Florida where they're not going after gang members. They went after a woman who had come in to testify about someone who had raped her. That is absolutely unacceptable, and that is someone who needs to be kept safe in our communities. In St. Louis, we just had ICE raid a middle school. They went into a middle school with local law enforcement using that 287G agreement and walked in and said, hey, we want these three kids. To bring that close to home here in Hillsborough, over a year ago, a group of concerned parents and activists brought that issue to our Hillsborough school board. And we said, hey, if you look at this, a Latino child's report card, law enforcement can't come in and ask for that because there's a federal law that says to request those documents under FERPA, you would have to have a subpoena issued by a judge. And so a Latino student in Hillsborough, their report card is safe in Hillsborough Public Schools. We asked the Hillsborough School Board to say, hey, can you make it so that Latino kids are as safe as their report card by requiring that there be a judicial warrant for ICE to come in and ask for a kid? We have counties here in Florida like Lee County that have already done that. Hillsborough chose not to do that. The Hillsborough School Board, perhaps due to a lack of spines, I don't know, maybe we get them sponsored by chiropractors, chose not to protect our kids here in Hillsborough. So we have to step up and do this independently, outside of these power structures, which is how the Whistle Watch was born, which is about the community taking care of itself. And so why do we blow whistles? Number one, because it's protected First Amendment speech. Number two, because it lets your neighbors know that ICE is in the area and that we can keep them safe. And number three, we can let people know that ICE is detaining someone so that you can come out and document it if that is happening. So let's talk about the whistle code because it is super simple. This will take about a minute. There are only two codes, all right? If you have spotted ICE, you do three short bursts from your whistle, which, again, we won't do to ruin your listeners' ears.
Tweet.
Shelly will be our stand-in whistle as we do this mini training. Three short bursts from the whistle means, hey, I've spotted ICE. That way people know to be on the lookout. If there's anybody who has any status that they are concerned about or just has black or brown skin, that they can get inside and get safe and get away from ICE.
Now, let me stop you for a second. If people see there's ICE activity, what we've heard, though, is that most of the ICE activity is coming out of Florida Highway Patrol and the Sheriff's Department. So what are we, like, assuming, you know, are we blowing the whistle every time you see a Florida Highway Patrol? And actually, that's not practical because they're on the roads. They're on the highway. And I don't want somebody driving to stop, you know, or like try to pull out a whistle. And, you know, and who on the highway is going to stop anyway and draw a crowd and start documenting? I mean, it just seems like the whistle code is very useful for urban areas, but in Hillsborough County, I'm just wondering, you know, about the utility of it when we are confronted with a situation where Florida Highway Patrol, for example, is the greatest immigration enforcement agency that we have here.
Correct. And so it's one of the biggest challenges we have in Florida. And this was, as we were establishing this, we spoke with some of the leaders of the ICE resistance in Chicago. And that was one of the first things they flagged for us. They said, this is a system that is great in more densely packed urban areas. Than it is in some of your more rural areas. Now, in a suburb, it can be moderately effective. So, for example, I live in Brandon. In Brandon, it can be effective there because you have quiet streets. You're going to notice if somebody's, you know, blowing a whistle. In Tampa, it will be effective. If you're out in a very rural area, it will be much more challenging
to make
it effective.
Or on 275 or I-4, you know?
And so the landscape of Florida makes it challenging. And then also the 287G agreements make it very, very challenging, right? Because this is not an anti-law enforcement movement, right? We have, I'm the president of the PTA for my kids' elementary school. And we had an issue where we had some weirdo standing on the sidewalk across the street recording kids. And as the president of the PTA, I called the Hillsborough County Sheriff, called their non-emergency line. But within 5 minutes, they were on scene. and they made sure that that guy was talked to, and he never did it again. And then to make sure the kids felt safe for the next week, the Hillsborough County Sheriff was there every day in front of the school. This is not about being anti-law enforcement, but the challenge with these 287G agreements is now those same Hillsborough County Sheriffs, who I was so proud to see what their response was when we dealt with this issue of this guy videoing kids. Now, they have to be in a spot where they are working with ICE. And so, unfortunately, if you see a Hillsborough County Sheriff stopping somebody black or brown, your best bet may be to record and then ask questions later.
Okay, so the first code is 3 short blasts. If you see an encounter between law enforcement and somebody black or brown that you think might be an immigration enforcement encounter, 3 short blasts, right?
3 short blasts.
Tweet. Okay.
Yep. All right. Now, get your lungs ready, because the second code is if ICE is actually detaining somebody. And in that situation, you want long blasts on the whistle so that people know, come out and record.
Okay, so this is
Let's hear it, Shelley.
This is like Tequila Gadol and Yom Kippur, like, woo! Okay, all right.
So, we are blowing whistles to draw attention and to get people looking. We have 2 codes. 3 short bursts, you're seeing ICE. Long bursts, ICE is detaining someone, come out and record. Now, when we do that, that's because recording, as you mentioned earlier, can help tone down the temperature with law enforcement. And in rare cases, if enough people are out there videotaping, ICE has chosen not to detain people. And so this is an opportunity to help keep our friends and neighbors safe in a way that we can't otherwise. Now, individually, with a whistle, there's not a whole lot that we can do. But with this, having a whistle, having these codes, if you get together with 5 people on your street, suddenly you can keep your entire street safe. Now, as you're looking to keep that street safe, you want to find people who are around during the day that you can talk to, people who are around when, you know, kids are coming home from school, things like that. One of the best things you can do is find the most irritating neighbor you've got, that one who is always watching everything that's going on in the neighborhood. Find that person and ask them to be part of the whistle watch, because that little old lady who sits at her kitchen table in the window every single
day. Gladys Kravitz.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm showing my age.
Yeah. For our older Bewitched fans, right. that's a reference to her always looking out the window.
Yeah.
That's exactly who you want to watch this. And you can organize this. And one of the things that has been fascinating to me when I organized my street, I obviously am a Democrat as the president of the East Hillsborough Democrats. The first person who signed up with me was an NPA. Mm-hmm. The second person who signed up with me was a Republican. This crosses party lines, because there are a lot of people who just want to see their friends and neighbors and the kids in their neighborhood be safe. So this is not just for Democrats. This is for everybody who wants to keep their community safe.
So if I understand you, one of your big recommendations is that people start forming these neighborhood groups. And these neighborhood groups should probably send a delegate to David Tallulah's event on Saturday at the Town and Country Library and learn how to develop these networks into really productive things that people can do to help their neighbors, right?
Correct. I think that would be fantastic. And I think one other thing that they can do, obviously we've done lots of trainings for Hillsborough Whistle Watch. We also have a website, hillsboroughwhistlewatch.com. And on that website is all the information we've been talking about here. It has information on how to create your own whistle packs so you can hand them out in your neighborhoods, including red cards that explain your rights in both English and Spanish. Including where can you get free whistles? We have a link to where you can get 100 to 3,000 free whistles, because there's an army of 3D printers printing off whistles to make sure that communities can keep themselves safe. It's got all the materials on everything that we just discussed, and it also has the phone number for the ACLU of Florida's Rapid Response Team and their legal observers, where they send people out to do the recording and confirmation as well.
And it's Hillsborough Whistle Watch, but really this is information that anybody in any of the counties in Florida should really have, right?
Correct. And we set this up deliberately, modeled off of the Chicago and Minneapolis model of, we need to make this information free for everyone so that we have a unified approach with these whistle codes. But we want to make it so that it is decentralized, because this needs to be the type of thing that can't be shut down. Mm-hmm. And by giving people the training and giving people the tools, every person who goes to this website could set up their own whistle watch in their neighborhood tonight.
Okay. All right. Well, that's really helpful information. I want to make sure that we give out again, because we're running out of time, David, the information about the LULAC event and the LULAC website where the El Escudo information is online as well.
Yes. This Saturday, April 18, at the Town and Country Library at 7606 Paula Drive, Tampa, at 10:30 a.m., there will be a panel titled Community Action for Immigration Solutions, The Humane Way. You're all invited. It is free. It will be in English with Spanish interpretation at the same time. You're all welcome to come, because the community can take care of itself and protect itself.
Right. And we've heard about a number of ways that the community can do that from Drew. So I think it would behoove you, if you're interested in participating in a community action plan to help protect your neighbors and keep your community safe, as my whistle says, then you may want to attend this event that LULAC is sponsoring. And take up the call to put together some of these networks that Drew has been talking about, right?
That sounds great.
All right. I want to just take a moment, Drew, to let you give out the hotline number again and the information about how to find the map.
Yep.
For enforcement activities, so that everybody has that at the end of the show as well.
All right, so three resources that everybody should have access to. The first one is the number for the ACLU of Florida's Rapid Response Line. This will allow them to send out trained legal observers and rapid response teams to any alleged ICE sighting. The phone number to call that is 1-888-600-5762. Again, that's 888-600-5762. That's an extremely important phone number to call. You're not going to get a better trained group of people than people coming from the ACLU of Florida. The second item that I would definitely recommend that everybody have access to is our website, which is free, hillsboroughwhistlewatch.com. It will have that phone number on it. It will give you foundations of how to do community organizing in your neighborhood. It will teach you where you can get free whistles and how to put together a whistle pack with all of those rights. And then, so I would definitely recommend everybody check up hillsboroughwhistlewatch.com. Our third and last item was how to find the state's hidden dashboard on immigration. And you search for this on Google. Florida's suspected unauthorized alien encounters. The first thing will be the State Board of Immigration Enforcement. There's a link in there. The second thing will be the actual dashboard itself.
All right. Thank you, Drew. I want to thank my guests, Drew Vaughn and David Sinclair. That's all we have time for today, my friends. Remember, we lost all of our government funding last year to the tune of $230,000, but we have a chance to make it up right now, well, in an hour, because from noon today through noon on Thursday, April 16th, WMNF is participating in the Giving Challenge, and every donation that you make will be matched dollar for dollar, from $25 up to $100 per donor, thanks to the Patterson Foundation. That means we only have to raise half of what we need to make up our budget, and the Patterson Foundation will donate the rest. So for these 24 hours, your dollar goes twice as far. So we hope that you'll go online during Mario and Joe's show, The Conversation, and every show thereafter, just until noon tomorrow, Thursday. And please, be as generous as you can. It should be very doable, with 1,150 listeners giving $100 or 2,300 listeners giving $50. That's all it's going to take to meet the match from the Patterson Foundation. So again, that's noon today through noon tomorrow. Go online to WMNF.org and help us meet the match, please. And thank you. I want to thank Daria, my show assistant, and Jess Green for getting us on air and keeping us there. Now, please stay tuned for Talking Animals with Urgent Cats today. We are WMNF Tampa, and we are out of here.